Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, you are listening to Radio Islam International. Welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zeenat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, a hearty welcome to all our listeners this afternoon. And as usual, we have our health news that comes up first. Today we have some breaking news that we will be sharing with our listeners. It's all about the treatment of retinitis pigmentosa. It's a breakthrough that's come through, and we will be talking about that a little later. My guest is Claudette Medefin, who is the head of science for Retina South Africa and also the deputy president of Retina International. And of course, she's indeed delighted to share this great news with us. So we'll be talking to her in a moment. In the next slot, we'll be talking about endometriosis. It is March. We're on obviously the end of March, but March is actually endometriosis month as well. And I'll be speaking to Lynn Zinema. And today we'll be talking about a very big event that took place. It's called the Million Women Walk for Endometriosis that took place on the 19th of March, and we'll also be talking about endometriosis itself. So that's what you can look forward to on this program today. So first up is our breaking news, and it's all about, say, the Reneuron Group, a leading UK-based stem cell therapy development company, has announced that the first patient has been treated in a phase 1 stem cell trial for retinitis pigmentosa at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear in Boston, a teaching affiliate of Harvard Medical School. The patient was discharged from hospital the same day. So to tell us more about this breakthrough is Claudette Medefin, head of science for Retina South Africa and the deputy president of Retina International. Well, good afternoon, Claudette. Thank you so much once again for joining us on Radio Islam International.
Salam, Sister Zeenat. It's such a pleasure to be on your show again. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to talk to you again, and thank you so much for informing us about this breakthrough. Well, they say it's the breakthrough is actually the treatment of retinitis pigmentosa. Now, for many of us, these are big words, and we don't quite understand what that exactly means. So, for the benefit of myself and our listeners out there, please tell us, what is retinitis pigmentosa?
Well, first of all, we just call it RP. That's much easier. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the major groups of retinal vision loss. There are hundreds of different conditions that fall under that umbrella, mm-hmm. but RP is one of the major ones, and it affects children and adults from all racial and all socioeconomic communities. It's found in every country in the world, and in South Africa, we estimate that we probably have about 25,000 people affected by RP.
Mm-hmm. Who does it actually affect, you said?
It can be diagnosed as early as 3 or 4, and sometimes for the rare forms at birth. And people can even be diagnosed late in their 50s. So it's a genetic condition, and what it does, it leads to the death of cells in the retina. Now, the retina lines the back of the eye and acts like a film in the camera. Mm-hmm. The light enters the eye, and it is processed by the photoreceptors, the rods and cones, and it's converted into a message, which is sent via the neural system to the brain, which is where you see. Mm-hmm. And in retinitis pigmentosa, for many different genetic reasons, the photoreceptors start to die, and bits of the visual information is lost. And as you get older, more and more cells die, and you end up with tunnel vision, and very often, sadly, with functional or total blindness.
Mm-hmm. And is this very common in our country?
Well, we estimate that there's probably between 1 in 3 to 4,000 people in the country affected by it, which equates to about 25,000 sufferers. But the most common form is what we call recessive inheritance, where the parents are unknowingly carrying a single copy of a gene with a mistake or a mutation, as we call it, and when two carriers marry, then you can have the child as affected. And that, we estimate, there are probably 10 million South Africans who are carriers of a single copy of a gene with a mutation that will cause RP.
Now, I understand that, from the information that was sent to us, that even you are very overjoyed at this news. How does it affect you?
Well, I have RP. I have very limited vision. I have a very small island of vision in the front. So if you make a fist, and your listeners can do it too, and you leave a little small hole in the middle and you look through that hole, you see a central island of vision. And that's what I can see. So I'm very lucky in that I can still read, but I have very poor peripheral vision. I have no peripheral vision, no night vision, and I have very poor mobility. So that's what happens in advanced retinitis pigmentosa. That field of vision gets narrower and narrower.
So for us, for the person that doesn't really know, but I know you mentioned some of it, but just for the benefit of us that may not have heard that correctly, what are some of the symptoms of this disease?
It starts off generally in early years with night vision loss. So children don't like to go out when it's dark, even in part in dimly lit rooms. They don't cope. They don't cope well in at school if the lights are not good, if it's a cloudy day. We also have poor contrast vision. So unless the blackboard in class is pristine and the chalk is very clear and white, you can't see what's written on the chalkboard. If they're working with an overhead board with some of these fancy new things that they use in the classroom, if you use a very pale yellow or a pale green on a white background, you don't see that. You need good contrast, and we have also what we call very slow light to dark adaptation. So you know when, Sister Zenit, if you go into a dark room from the light, your eyes take a few seconds to adjust. Well, in RP, your eyes can take 15 minutes to adjust, and then they don't, of course, adjust up to the same level as other people. So for children in the classroom, if they come into a dimly lit classroom from a very bright playground, they won't be able to see anything clearly for 15 minutes, and then they don't see that well if the light's not sufficiently high enough for luminance. So it affects children in the classroom. They don't like to go out when it's dark, so they become repressive, and it affects their whole life.
Mm. Yes, I can imagine. And then sometimes, obviously, it's very difficult for children to explain and to let parents know what the problem actually is.
Well, children have no way of knowing what normal vision is.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Everybody's vision is very subjective. And, a child will battle, and because they can see sometimes they see quite well. When the light is good and everything is fine, they see quite well. So it's really confusing for the families, and sometimes the teachers are the first to pick up that there is a problem with variable vision. And then we start this long story of going to an optometrist and trying to get a diagnosis. And in the early stages, sometimes these conditions are not easy to diagnose, so we really want to create awareness.
Mm-hmm.
For example, people with central vision loss, which is Stargardt's or cone dystrophies, these children lose the ability to read at an early age, while their peripheral vision and their mobility remains good. So people don't appreciate that there's various aspects of vision. You're not either sighted or you're blind. There's a long road in between those two extremes, and there can be various aspects of vision that are affected.
Okay, so tell us a little about this new treatment, this breakthrough in the treatment of retinitis pigmentosa, and for short, obviously, we're going to say RP for that.
Absolutely.
Yes. What is this treatment all about, and
so
what does it really mean?
it's really the first time that we've actually had a treatment for RP that's gone into clinical trial, and they're going to treat 15 people, and they've only treated one, but there will be 15 people treated, and it's a phase one clinical trial, and a phase one clinical trial is only about safety. So they treat small numbers of people with advanced vision loss, so they've got nothing to lose, and then they treat them with the treatment and check if it's safe. And this particular treatment is they're using new stem cells, progenitor stem cells, and they're introducing this to the back of the eye. And amazingly, these new cells integrate into the retina, and they not only save or protect the existing cells that haven't died yet, but they can actually stimulate the cells that are no longer functioning and restore some vision. So it's a really significant treatment, and we're hoping that in time this treatment will come to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's phase one at the moment, and that will take probably the rest of this year and maybe into next year. I mean, if all things are good and no detrimental effects are noticed, then it would go into phase two clinical trial, which involves more people. It might be up to 50 patients. And then again, they would look at safety and also does it work, and also perhaps look at dosing issues. And then if that's safe, and that could probably be another 2 years, then they would go to what we call multi-center phase three clinical trials, where they could choose different countries and different clinics to actually try the treatment in. And that's where Retina South Africa is working with these people to actually see if we can bring a phase three clinical trial to South Africa.
Okay. So when did you say would it be available in South Africa, this trial?
It's probably going to be in 4 or 5 years' time.
Uh-huh.
And then people might say, oh, well, that's not anything exciting. We'll wait until it becomes available.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the case. We need to use this window of opportunity between now and when the clinical trials do come to South Africa to actually contact patients, because we need a very good and clear clinical diagnosis, and that's not easy. And we also sometimes need a genetic diagnosis. So we need to understand precisely what condition they've got, because these trials and the therapies are condition specific and sometimes even gene specific. And we're looking at over 200 genes that can cause mutations in 200 genes that can cause these different kinds of retinal vision loss. So we need patients to register with Retina South Africa right now, and let's start getting people with a good clinical diagnosis and, if necessary, a good genetic diagnosis onto our patient registry, so when they start calling for South African patients, we've got the patients ready. So we need to get our patients prepared and ready for when clinical trials come to South Africa.
So basically, this is what you here in South Africa will be doing, getting the patients ready, with their clinical and, of course, genetic diagnosis, making absolutely sure they're ready. When the time comes, no time will be wasted. The patients will be ready, and the trials can then start.
Absolutely. Imagine the horror if they say we could treat 20 or 30 or 50 patients with a particular genetic type of RP, and we don't know who those patients are.
Mm.
Wouldn't that be sad?
Yes,
that
certainly.
Those patients then could have access to a clinical trial, and of course after a clinical trial, the therapy will become commercially available. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and we need to have the patients from all our communities step forward and register with Retina South Africa. We offer a confidential patient registry, and all the work done with the patients is done in conjunction with their eye specialist and their health care providers, and it's all very confidential. We work with genetic counselors, and we work with the University of Cape Town, who will actually facilitate the genetic testing.
Okay. So if people are interested, then who should they contact, and, you know, what is the process?
They can contact Retina South Africa through our website, which is www.retinasa.org.za, or they can phone our helpline on 0860 595959, and one of our counsellors will phone them back, and we offer counselling and information, education, information on supplements, on how to care for their vision. If necessary, we'll give them pamphlets and booklets to give to the children's teachers at school so that the teachers can understand where the children might need some help, and we offer comprehensive counselling and support service.
Mm-hmm. And do you have an SMS line by any chance?
Yes, we do. We would love your listeners to help us bring clinical trials to South Africa by SMSing the word DREAM to 38267. That SMS will cost them 10 rand, and that goes straight to the search. And we really would like to appeal to all your listeners to do that. If anybody would like to support our work to a larger extent, if they go onto our website, our banking details are there, and for any donation over 2,000 Rand, they will get a tax-deductible certificate. And it's tax time now, and I'm sure everybody would like some tax-deductibility.
Well, thank you very, very much for that amazing news that you just shared with us. I'm sure listeners out there would be, you know, delighted to know that, you know, there may be some help for them out there in the future, inshallah.
Thank you so much, Sister Zina.
Well, thank you so much, and thanks for all that information.
Thank you.
Well, to our listeners out there, that numbers again, the helpline number is 0860 595959. That's the helpline number for Retina South Africa. You can also SMS DREAM, DREAM, to 38267. And you can also, for more information, obviously, visit the website, which is www.retinasa.org.za. Well, it's all about the breakthrough in the treatment of retinitis pigmentosa. Well, listeners, that's it. When we return, inshallah, we're going to be speaking to Lynn Zinema, who is a nursing sister, a health coach, and a founder of Endometriosis South Africa. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zenith. Well, it's time to stand up and speak out. Are you tired of 10 years of diagnostic delays, tired of being denied care in the ER, tired of being told incapacitating pain is normal? Well, a staggering 1 in 10 women suffer from endometriosis. Now, on the 19th of March, a big event took place. It was called the Million Women Walk for Endometriosis. And joining me this afternoon is Lynn Zinema, who is a nursing sister. She's also a health coach and, of course, the founder of Endometriosis of South Africa, and she's going to be telling us all about that big march, that big event that took place, and we're also going to be talking about endometriosis. Good afternoon, Lynn. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, and thank you very much for having me.
Okay, now we'll start off with, of course, the march first, and, you know, unfortunately we couldn't cover it that day, but tell us about it. What was this march, you know, all about? What's the purpose of it? What actually happened there, and was it successful that day?
It was very successful. We are very, very pleased with the numbers that turned out across South Africa in Johannesburg, Cape Town, and Durban. And the Global Women, Million Women March for Endometriosis is, as the word says, a global event. So it takes place across the world. And the objective, it started about 3 years ago. South Africa has been involved with it for the last 3 years. And the objective of this march is to get a million women around the world to march to raise awareness about endometriosis, which is a female disease that is often not spoken about and not talked about, and people are quite embarrassed by it, and sometimes we're just not allowed to talk about it. And obviously in a minute we're going to talk about what endometriosis is all about.
Mm-hmm.
So this march was a way that we could join the rest of the world and South African women could add their voice to the whole issue of endometriosis, raising awareness, breaking down barriers, getting people to talk about it, and also raising awareness that it is a treatable disease and that people should go for help and not be afraid to talk about it or embarrassed to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And you say it was successful. Tell us a little more. What was this march actually, you know, what was happening on that day?
Well, we all came together on the 19th of March, and it was a date chosen globally, so all the women in the world came together on that day in their different countries and chose a venue. And in South Africa we had various venues in Cape Town, Johannesburg and Durban.
Mm-hmm.
We had different volunteers in the different areas, and people registered via Facebook and via different means. We started advertising this in December and January, January this year and December last year. And people came together in their droves. They brought their husbands, they brought their partners, they brought their children. Because, of course, part of this is to march with your husband because it also affects him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has to witness your pain, and often men feel very helpless. They don't know what to do. And often it's exactly the kind of thing that men feel embarrassed talking about, or women feel embarrassed talking to their husbands about. So part of this march was also to encourage people to bring their husbands, bring their daughters, their sons, get together with people who understand this condition and share it, so that you also know that you are not alone and that there is support. Part of the objective of this march is also to get people to meet each other so that they can stay in contact with one another and, you know, in that way support each other and motivate each other to get the help and not lose courage.
Yes, I think that's so important, because sometimes when you're suffering alone, you feel you're really alone in this world and there possibly cannot be anybody else going through the same kind of pain that you're going. But just the fact that you know that there's somebody else out there that's going through the same thing makes a big difference.
I think that was very much one of our objectives, and one that we certainly did achieve. If we look at our Facebook, we've got a group called Endo Warriors,
mm-hmm.
You know, which is a Facebook-driven Facebook-driven support group. And you see the feedback that we've had there, as well as on the website, of how people enjoyed the walk and how many of them said that one of the biggest things for them was that they found friends and that they found people that suffer from the same condition. And they also saw people there that had been treated properly and that had, you know, are now able to live lives without the constant pain and debilitation that often goes with endometriosis.
Mm. Now tell me, you know, we're talking about endometriosis. I'm sure there's people out there that must be wondering, what is this again?
Yes.
So what is endometriosis?
So what endometriosis is a condition that affects girls and women. And I want to stress here that it can affect a young girl from the time that she starts her periods. So what endometriosis is in the uterus, in the womb, there's a lining called the endometrium, which every single month, under the influence of your female hormones, your progesterone and your estrogen, grows nice and thick in preparation of a fertilized egg. If that egg is not fertilized, you've chosen not to have a baby, then this endometrium, this lining, simply comes off and is discarded by the body in the form of a period. Now, what happens with endometriosis is that this same lining, for some reason, we don't know, with the speculation as to why it happens, we don't know the reasons why, but we do know that in some women, like you were saying, in 1 in 10 women of reproductive age, this lining also grows outside the uterus. So it can grow on your bladder, usually in the pelvic cavity, but it can also grow elsewhere. So it can grow on the bladder, it can grow on your fallopian tubes, which are the little tubes that the eggs travel down in. It can grow on your rectum, it can grow in your abdomen. And the same as what happens inside the uterus now happens outside the uterus, that every month these cells swell up And when there's no fertilized egg, they will bleed off, except there's no place for the blood to go. And that then causes adhesions and scarrings and pooling of blood that sometimes can cause cysts. And because these scars and adhesions then sit on the different organs, it causes the various types of pain that women then become accustomed to and are sort of told that this is just a normal part of being a woman.
Mm.
If one looks at the kinds of symptoms that women can experience, one of the main things is very, very severe period pain. So during their menses, you sometimes find that women get sick, they're nauseous, they may physically vomit, they can faint, they just become very, very debilitated during that time of the month. And we as girls and women are often raised with the idea that we shouldn't talk about it and that we should just accept it as part and parcel of being a woman. And nothing can be further from the truth. If you are suffering from this kind of debilitating pain during your monthly period, you need to go to a doctor and insist that they look at what is going on, because often it is endometriosis. There's also other symptoms that go with it, which is usually pain-driven. So often there's pelvic pain that you just generally have a lot of pain in your pelvis area. You can't really define where it is. You know, once you start to sort of look into it, then the doctor can tell you it's because there's, you know, endometriosis sitting on your fallopian tube or in your colon, which is causing the pain. But often it's an undefined, constant pain, pelvic pain, that one should then be alerted to go and have a look what the problem is. There's also back pain, because very often the endometriosis sits somewhere where it's affecting the, you know, your back nerves, or it's affecting your kidneys, or it's affecting your colon, and that's referring the pain. So generally endometriosis is the kind of pelvic pain that women just generally accept as being part and parcel of being a woman. And that's one of the myths that we want to really expel and dispel out there, is that a severe period pain where a normal Panado, a paracetamol is not helping you, should not be regarded as normal, and you should be going to a doctor, and preferably a doctor who knows and understands endometriosis. And quite frankly, you should ask them to check you for endometriosis and ask them what is the possibility that you have endometriosis, because often this diagnosis is overlooked.
Yes, and I think, you know, in younger girls, we tend to overlook it and just hope that it would go away after a while, you know, and things will go back to normal.
You know, Sister Zena, that's also, I'm glad that you raised that, because often, you know, that is exactly, we are all raised that way as women and girls. Remember, sometimes it runs in families, and so a mother would tell her daughter, you know, I also suffered like that, it's just something you're going to have to get used to, because obviously in the mother or the grandmother's day, the awareness of endometriosis just wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So in those days, there was very little that you could do for it. But obviously as time goes by and science progresses, then there's more research done and one can see what's going on. So that is definitely one of the big things, is that not to think that young girls can't have endometriosis, and particularly if that pain is getting worse and worse and not getting better, it's time for the mother to take this, you know, to take the daughter to a doctor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, sometimes we take our children to the doctor, and obviously it's also one of the things that's endometriosis is not easily diagnosed, and you know, we tend to go from one doctor to the other doctor and end up, you know, the child really suffers. So what do you do in that case?
Well, that's why we're raising awareness, because you are absolutely correct. The clinical data shows and the science shows that it takes on average 8, sometimes up to 12 years for a woman to be diagnosed with endometriosis, and there's various reasons for it. Number one is because people are not alerted and on the lookout for endometriosis. So you might even be with a doctor that thinks it's quite normal to have these period pains, and that's why you should be challenging the doctor and saying, but I've heard this, and can you please have a look at it? Or go to a doctor that specializes in endometriosis, or a general practitioner that does women's health. They will be more attuned into actually recognizing endometriosis. So that's the one thing. The other thing is also to remember that endometriosis often mimics the symptoms of other conditions like irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. So if someone's complaining that they've got bowel pains and they're uncomfortable and they're constipated, then it's It's not, you know, it's not difficult to understand why a doctor would then perhaps say, well, it may be irritable bowel, and try and treat people for irritable bowel syndrome, for instance. There may also be polycystic ovaries. There may be other conditions that have similar symptoms that, unless you alert your doctor, or unless a doctor is already alerted to the possibility of endometriosis, it is very often overlooked because the symptoms are so clandestine and so similar to other conditions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to take a very short break. When we return, we will continue. A reminder to our listeners, we have a few minutes. If anyone would like to ask any questions, please feel free to contact us. The number to dial is 011-854-1548. You can also SMS us on the number 082-84-92-786. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to Family Health Matters. And we're talking to Lynn Zinema, who is a nursing sister, a health coach, and founder of Endometriosis of South Africa. And, well, I know it's the end of the month already, but March was and is Endometriosis Month. And we just spoke a little about what endometriosis is all about. And what I also want to talk about is, Lynn, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. You know, we spoke a little about the myths that are associated with endometriosis. Some of them is, you know, that we spoke about this, that you have to live with the pain, that there's no treatment, etc., that it's not easily diagnosed. And one of them is that you may not be able to have children. So how do we actually dispel of this? And is it true that some of these myths throw or not?
Well, it's not a myth that endometriosis is associated with infertility,
mm-hmm.
but it is a myth that every single person with endometriosis will never be able to have children. So some women with endometriosis do have problems falling pregnant simply because of where the endometriosis is growing. You can imagine if it's growing over the ovum and it's in your fallopian tube, then it will be very difficult for the egg to travel down the fallopian tube, even if it is fertilized.
Mm-hmm.
So often, endometriosis is first picked up when women go for help because they can't fall pregnant. And that led to the myth that endometriosis causes infertility in every single person that has it. That is not true. It is also not true that you will never have children. So if you are battling to fall pregnant, then go and get it examined as quickly as possible so that you can see whether you have endometriosis or not. And of course, remember, as we grow older, then our capacity to fall pregnant also decreases quite drastically. So if you sort of going towards your 30s and you are battling to fall pregnant, then it's better for you to go to a fertility expert and ask them to have a look at it. And usually that's when they would make a diagnosis of endometriosis if it is there. However, what we should remember is that many women with endometriosis also have children. So if you go to a doctor who says to you, well, you can't have endometriosis, it couldn't be endometriosis because you have children, then we also need to understand that that is a myth. So one of the big myths that we want to also dispel is that endometriosis causes infertility across the board. It does not. And if you go to a qualified doctor and to someone who understands infertility and endometriosis, you are very often, you can, with assisted reproduction, you can fall pregnant.
Okay. Now, just another important question, I think, and, you know, it's important for us to know about this, but how does endometriosis really affect the lives of young girls and women?
Well, they live in pain all the time. So besides having very bad period pains and debilitating period pains, they constantly have pains in their pelvis, backache, and obviously that tires them out. So often what happens is that they are not able to partake in normal life activities or school activities. They are tired, they are in pain, and if you're in pain, it's very difficult to maintain good relationships because you probably end up snapping at everyone. And so often they are off work or off school very, very frequently because of their endometriosis. And overall, their ability to just live a normal life is very compromised. Their quality of life is extremely compromised when you have endometriosis. So that's also something that one should remember, is that it's one of the reasons why it should be treated, because very often these women and girls are in the prime of their lives where if the endometriosis is identified and treated properly and they are less debilitated, and very often, you know, they are so well treated that they can just carry on with a normal life, they can contribute to society, to their job, to their motherhood, to their partners. And that's the sad part of it, if it's not identified early, that women often go through the prime of their lives feeling bogged down and in pain and not being able to contribute fully to what they would be able to contribute if they were treated properly.
Okay.
Also, you know, Sister Zina, yes, if we can touch on the diagnosis, would you mind if we did that?
No, definitely not.
Okay, so how endometriosis is generally diagnosed is either by the symptoms, where a doctor can take a thorough history of your family history and your own history of your, you know, of how you experience endometriosis, and they can make an assumption that you have endometriosis based on the symptoms and the family history and what they identify, and put you on a trial of medical treatment. Alternatively, the only way to rule out endometriosis, and it's also obviously used as a diagnostic procedure, is a laparoscopy, where doctors who are qualified enough to do it go and have a look by means of a laparoscope, which is where they put a tube in through your belly button and two other little cuts, mm-hmm. although it's by no means a small operation. They can go and have a look at and see if there's endometriosis and where the endometriosis is, and in the same procedure they can remove the endometriosis through various means. Now, the thing is that often laparoscopies, they often, you know, they cost money, and it is surgery. So just like if you had a sore back, doctors wouldn't immediately go and say, well, let's do a back operation. They would treat you conservatively with medication first, and if that didn't help, they would move forward into some kind of surgery. Now, it's the same with endometriosis. Today, because we know so much about endometriosis, if you are with a doctor that understands the disease, they can do a thorough history and a thorough examination to have a look at whether they can make a safe or a reasonably safe assumption that there is endometriosis and give you a trial of treatment and see if that helps you. Or they may decide, let's go and do a laparoscope and have a look at what is actually going on. When it comes to laparoscopy, we want you to remember two or three things. Number one, the quality of that laparoscopy is going to depend on the experience and the expertise of the doctor. So while there are many, many doctors out there that can do laparoscopies because they're qualified doctors, they are not all experienced enough to do a laparoscopy properly and to excise that endometriosis properly and to know where they can go and have a look, because endometriosis hides away. And if you are not an experienced doctor who knows how to do this laparoscopy, it would probably not be as effective as dealing or working with someone that is qualified and has done many laparoscopies. So that's the one thing, is don't just, if you are going to go and have a laparoscopy, make sure you are with an endometriosis specialist and ask them, how many laparoscopies have you done? Because people, doctors that do laparoscopies do them most days, a few a day. So they are highly qualified and highly skilled.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing. Mm-hmm. The second thing to remember is that endometriosis generally does come back. So a laparoscopy is by no means a cure for endometriosis. It can make it better, but often after a year or two, you have to go back for either another laparoscopy, or these days doctors may put you on a medical treatment after the laparoscopy medication to limit the growth of that endometriosis.
Okay.
Endometriosis grows because of our estrogen. So that's why we say it's 1 in 10 women in their reproductive years, because prior to the onset of your period, you don't have enough estrogen to stimulate that endometriosis. And obviously once you're completely in menopause, then your endometriosis will calm down and probably disappear. Pregnancy does not cure endometriosis. It may again subdue the symptoms while you are pregnant, but a few months after you've had your baby, it may very well flare up again. It usually does. And hysterectomy is absolutely not a cure for endometriosis. It's also one of the biggest myths that out there. Many, many doctors still recommend hysterectomy to patients to cure them of the endometriosis. And I really would like people to understand that hysterectomy does not cure endometriosis.
Mm-hmm. Well, It's amazing, you know, how much can be done and yet people suffer in silence. And I think this is what we hope that our listeners will be, you know, now aware of, that there's so much of help available and just to go to the right person or the right people to get it sorted out.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And just one final question, and I think it's so important. We spoke about this earlier. We say that, you know, women don't talk about this condition of them. But, you know, how important is it for you to discuss this kind of condition with your spouse?
One of the symptoms and one of the things that does happen with endometriosis, with many women with endometriosis, is a condition called dyspareunia, which is pain during intercourse. And so one can imagine the strain that could place on a relationship. Also, the effects in between your menses, when you constantly have pelvic pain, you're constantly tired, it is very important for a husband to understand what endometriosis is all about so that he can support his spouse and his spouse can learn to open up to him and they can support each other through this. So it is very important. That's why when we have our walks and we have our functions, we often have information evenings. More and more women are bringing their husbands with to those evenings. And once the husbands are exposed to that, they are delighted. They are delighted. They just say that it is so enlightening for them. I think it just places your relationship on a different level if you can talk about something like endometriosis and really be accommodating and assist each other through this process.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if people, Lynn, if they're interested and if they would like to know more about endometriosis, can they contact you or the helpline?
Listen, they can contact me through the Endometriosis Society, and the best way to do that is to go on our website. I'm going to give the address if you'll allow me to do that.
Yes,
I just want to tell you that on that website, there are a few brochures, there's some news events. You know, if we've had something in the newspaper that is a good article, we put that in there. There's a video on there. There's a booklet called Living with Endometriosis that is all available free of charge. And if they feel like signing up to be a member or to be a volunteer, they will see it's very easy to navigate that website. They can sign up. Membership is free of charge. There's absolutely no charge for people that want to be part of the Endometriosis Society. And, of course, once you're registered, then you receive regular updates about what is actually happening. So our website is called www.endpain.co.za. We want to end the pain associated with endometriosis, so it's called www.endpain.co.za.
Okay.
And if they would like to join the Endo Warriors, they can go onto Facebook and type in Endo Warriors SA. And they will be taken to the page, or if they're having difficulties through that, they can link up through the website.
Yes, okay, and no. Okay, so basically that's how they can get into contact
with
you.
Yes, and we would love to hear from people. We would like to hear their stories. If they want us to direct them to, you know, we've got lists of doctors that are endometriosis specialists. If you want to know information about the disease, if you want to help us host an information afternoon or evening, we are very, very happy to do that. We also don't charge for any of our services. So if people want us to come to their offices or to their place of worship and to a group of women, we are very, very happy to do that.
Well, thank you very, very much, Lynn, for talking to us. We certainly do appreciate it. And we have to end the program right now. It's time for the news. But thank you so much for all that information. I'm sure our listeners out there would certainly benefit from that.
It's been a pleasure. And thank you very much for allowing us this platform. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, bye. Well, that was it. Until next time, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.